You're listening to the Why Big Football Show with Dave O'Grady. We profile Irish soccer at home and abroad. If you want to sponsor, advertise, or just get involved in the Why Big Football Show, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Talk to you soon. Enjoy the show. An old enemy encounter awaits the Irish team in May. There was heartbreak against Austria, and now many Irish fans will head into the summer not knowing what chance Ireland have of qualifying for Brazil. This is the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. Remember, if you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or get involved with the show, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Joining us on the show this evening is James Carew of PogueMagoal.com, and we're delighted to have Gavin Tehan, event manager of the Irish World Cup 2013, a seven-a-side tournament kicking off at the start of June. Gavin, thanks a million for joining us. Firstly, how did the idea for this tournament come about?
Hi, thanks for having me, Dave. The idea came about simply because this year they have the Gathering, which is an initiative to bring back people from outside of Ireland, back home to Ireland, to celebrate everything that is Irish. So the company that I'm involved in have decided to put on a football tournament supported by the FAI and supported by Tourism Ireland called the Irish World Cup 2013 to basically invite people to come back to Ireland to play in our very own Irish World Cup.
It's something certainly we haven't seen before. I know it's a more of a recent thing, you know, five-a-side tournaments, seven-a-side tournaments. It'll be no doubt, I'd imagine, Gavin, that you'll have a huge interest in it.
Yes, I hope so. And the longer term, Dave, we'd like to make this an annual event. I've been involved in football myself pretty much all my life at various levels of the game. And one thing I've noticed is that there's not a huge amount of tournaments for adults in the country. As you rightly said, social football, five-a-side and seven-a-side has become very, very popular. But a lot of it is localised and a lot of it is just held with groups of 10 or 20 friends, male and female, who just get together weekly to play the game. So what we're trying to do is widen that audience and get fans of Irish football and world football together, not only to play football, but obviously socialise as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm just thinking of what you were saying there, Gavin. It's something that got me thinking of watching clips from, you know, in Brazil, adults are always just playing football, even though they're not playing it at maybe a professional level, but they're playing it for the fun of it and that kind of thing. And obviously here in Ireland, we don't have the weather for weather permitting, but I suppose with, you know, the introduction of new facilities and that, it's given us the chance to open up a whole new world in this regard.
Oh, completely. And as I said, so far the interest in the tournament has been absolutely fantastic from within the football community itself and indeed beyond. And we're really looking forward to having a very good event in the summer.
Yeah, James, to come to yourself on this, it sounded like a really good event. And we always, as Gavin was saying, we always hear of the tournaments for kids, and local football clubs have organised little things for the progression of football across, you know, the country, and mostly for getting kids at underage level involved. But there's a lot of adults that would like to take part in some form of football, but they can never quite get the right team or find the right level for themselves. And I suppose something like this will aid that want.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic idea. Just even going by discussions on the Why Big forum, if you like, I know around Ireland matches for the last couple of years, they've organised fans games between the visiting nation, or when Irish fans go away, they'll take on a local group. And I think it's a fantastic idea. Also, it's a great advertisement for Ireland too, that we would associate it with football as well. You only have to look at the last game and the Austrian couple who made the news probably for the wrong reasons when their tickets were stolen. But it turned into a good news story when Irish fans rallied round. But the point I was going to make was that they chose to come to Ireland because of the reputation of the fans. So it was, if you like, a tourism boost that they came here because of the reputation. And now we have something to build on that, where football teams from around the world would come to Ireland for something like this, which is a social event as much as anything.
Yeah, indeed. And Gavin, the event itself, who can take part in it? Are you looking at, would you need to be fit, or both men and women can get involved?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an adult tournament, so anyone who's over 18 is welcome to come along. We would like to see both male and female participants. In terms of level, it's open to everybody. As I said, we really want people from all levels of ability and all levels of interest just to get together. And it's not just about the football. So yes, the football is important in that we have our seven-a-side tournament. But outside of that, there's a whole range of events around going to the Irish match itself against the Faroes on the Friday the 7th of June. Saturday night, we have a music concert planned and a barbecue. So there's a lot more than just the football. So we'd encourage anybody to check it out on IrishWorldCup.ie and come along.
Yeah, I was reading actually up a little bit about it, Gavin, and I was reading about the World Cup Village that you guys will be hosting. And as you said, the initiative, it's a real incentive for people, I suppose, to get involved, in the sense it's not just about playing the game. They can come along, enjoy the crack, the music, there's got to be good food there, and making something like that not just a seven-a-side tournament, turning it into a kind of a big event with people from, I suppose, as many walks of life as possible.
Exactly, absolutely. The players are obviously very important and they'll be the core of what's going on the weekend, but we want them to bring their partners and bring their mates and come along and make a weekend of it. And it'll be spread out over the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So hopefully there's something for everybody.
Gavin, just a quick question. Is it open to teams, like clubs already to enter, or just kind of get a bunch together and enter that way, or turn up over the 3 days?
Again, obviously, it's the first year we're running this event, so we'd be very interested ourselves to see where the teams come from. But certainly, we'd encourage clubs to send teams along. We'd encourage mates to get together and send teams along. We'd encourage the likes of work social clubs to maybe get employees together and send a team along. So it really is open to anybody. We obviously want it to be just a bit of fun for people to come. You're going to play a minimum of 6 games, regardless of your level of ability, the way we plan the group stages. So you're going to have football right over the weekend.
And the point I was making there, Gavin, earlier, it has to be said that the facilities, you guys are playing this in UCD, I think the bulk of the tournament, and fantastic facilities. And in the early days, we wouldn't have necessarily had facilities as good as this to play. It certainly is a new step for football in Ireland, both amateur and professional, really.
It's so important at all levels of the game. We need places to play the game. We need grass pitches, we need astro pitches, we need indoor facilities. And UCD, as you rightly said, is a fantastic venue for this. The pitches are going to be grass, weather permitting, but we do have an artificial pitch backup service as well. So if the weather does happen to be very, very bad over the weekend, we can move the event. So it will happen. But as you rightly said, the facilities are so important, and UCD is a very, very good venue for this, both in terms of the pitches and indeed the student centre itself, where a lot of the socialising activity will happen around the music concert and the bars and food. So it's going to be an excellent weekend.
I see you guys have Irish football legend John Aldridge involved. That's a big coup, and it's certainly something that perhaps will help you guys. If you're looking to make it an annual event, it'll drive it forward.
Absolutely. John's been absolutely brilliant since he got involved. He himself thinks it's a fantastic idea. We've met him now on a number of occasions, and his enthusiasm is brilliant. I think John is still very, very popular amongst Irish fans for his own exploits when he played for Ireland. But very, very nice guy, great sense of humour, and a good guy to have involved in something like this. He's given a lot of credibility in terms of our PR, and he's just, as I said, a good guy. A lot of people seem to have reacted very well to his inclusion and his involvement.
There'll be a lot of competition, no doubt, across the tournament, Gavin, for the teams that'll be going there. Some teams may be just going there for the fun. Other teams will be getting quite competitive about it, but there's some very tasty prizes to be won, I do believe.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, there will be people who will come and really just want to compete for the prizes. There will be others who will just come for the social side. But we want to make it clear to people that it is open to everybody. And at the end of the day, you're going to play 6 games regardless of how you get on in the competition overall. But there is a prize pot of €5,000. And we're looking to get the winning team to the Ireland and Sweden game in September and have a VIP day out with us. So, yeah, there's some other attractive prizes there as well. But as I said, it's not just about the prizes, it's not just about the winning. It's very much a social event as well. I just want people to come along and enjoy themselves.
And James, just to come to yourself on a point, the fact that they're tying it in, I suppose, with a lot of the Irish matches and this kind of thing, it really helps, I suppose. It might drive a few more people to the Ireland home games, you know, if we have more of an event. A lot of times, particularly around Irish friendlies, it's hard to know in Dublin if there is a match on.
Yeah, what I think about this event is perhaps it really started with the World Cup in Germany, this kind of fan villages, and now it's become part of the norm at the big events. Anyone who went to Poland would have seen the organised element of it, and, you know, get all the fans together, a place to congregate, surround around a match. And there's no reason. I know they tried to do something similar along the Keys over the last couple of games, but something like this where you combine it with actually competing and meeting other teams and the element of actually playing football, I think can only be a good thing.
Yeah, it certainly can. And Gavin, just before we let you go, what's the best way for people to find out more information and get involved in the tournament?
We're on all the social media platforms, so you'll find us on Facebook and Twitter at Irish World Cup. But in terms of getting onto the website and registering, it's irishworldcup.ie. Follow the various links, and there's a number of early incentive registration prizes, like a chance to meet the Irish team themselves ahead of the clash with the Faroes out in their training base in Malahide on the Thursday prior to the game. So stuff like that. There's an opportunity for fans to get involved in that regard. There's also going to be some like signed jerseys from John himself, John Aldridge, and other prizes as we count down the clock over the next couple of weeks. We're down now to around the kind of 7-8 week mark. So we really think in the next couple of weeks we're going to see a huge surge of interest in terms of team registration.
Well, Gavin, we wish you the very best of luck. No doubt it's going to be a huge success, and hopefully it will be the start of a very successful annual event. Thanks a million for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Our thanks there to Gavin Tighean of the Irish World Cup 2013. Now, over the past few months, we've been keeping an eye on how our Irish players have been getting on for their clubs. The next game is a friendly against England, the first time the sides have met since 1995, and that ill-fated friendly in Lansdowne Road. Now, we're delighted to be joined by Emmett Malone, football correspondent at the Irish Times. Emmett, before we look ahead to the England game, we have to mention the World Cup qualifiers and the last two games. Is it fair to say that our campaign has been somewhat derailed?
Well, it's certainly a setback. I mean, the performance in Sweden was good. It was a really solid performance, possibly our best on the road for a couple of years, and a really good point. And it seemed to kind of give us slightly the upper hand in the race for second place. But it wasn't kind of very very long lived. I mean, clearly the Austrian game was a major setback, and it's left us in a position now where even 4 points from the reverse fixtures in the autumn probably wouldn't be enough. We probably were looking at now winning, having to beat Sweden at home and win in Vienna, which is really not something that you'd have a huge amount of confidence in a student.
Yeah, I always think, Emmett, going in, when we were going into these two qualifiers, there was talk of, okay, 4 points would be good from both of them. I always think when we see that put about, it always puts extra pressure on the lads, and sometimes, more often than not, unfortunately, it doesn't go as planned.
Yeah, I agree with you to some extent, but I think that was the kind of scenario. The 4 points would have been good, and 4 points in that sort of order, where if we got a draw in Stockholm and we beat the Austrians, then we would have been in pretty good shape. And to get the first bit of it out of the way, which on the face of it was the harder bit to do, did seem to really kind of set us up fairly nicely. Having said that, this is, part of a pattern that goes back a long way with the Irish team, which is that we are, apparently incredibly hard to beat away from home against, a wide range of middle-ranking teams, from teams from just below the very top to a long way down the line. But what we can't seem to do is beat anybody with that's in any way decent. And then we saw that again, because Austria really, I mean, they had their moments at Lansdowne Road, but they really didn't look like a great team. They certainly looked like the sort of side that we should be, not just on paper, but just on the pitch that night. They looked like the sort of team we should be beating if we're serious about getting to major championships, and yet we couldn't do it.
Indeed. And James, just to come to yourself on this, as Emmett was saying, it seems like we have serious problems, particularly at home, beating any team of kind of that might be up and around our level and that. And I think the last time we beat a higher ranked team was in the qualifiers for the World Cup in 2002, when we beat the Dutch in Lansdowne Road. But do we have, from a positive point of view, do you think we have a new style of playing? I mean, we have seen the Irish team now, particularly with both the left and right backs, we no longer seem to hoof the ball as much as we did.
Yeah, I think everybody was surprised by the display in Sweden. Before we spoke last time, Dave, nobody really gave us a hope going there, and I think everyone was kind of shocked that we had full backs attacking, and we weren't really creating chances, but we looked like we could, if that's a plus you could take from it, Dave. But yeah, I definitely think it was an improvement. I'm surprised, really, and maybe it's the kind of malaise that set in amongst fans, is that there wasn't really a reaction that yeah, this was a good performance. If anything, it was split. Some people recognise it was a good performance and improvement. Other people are just so dead against Trapattoni that they want him gone. They weren't prepared to acknowledge even that it was an improvement. But and over the two games, there were definitely spells where we were the better side. But as Emmett said, like when it came to it, we couldn't win at home. And prior to the game, I think even Liam Brady had said he would see us struggle to beat Austria at home because we don't create enough chances. And that's just the way it turned out.
Yeah, Emmett, going forward with Trapp, I mean, some of the players that he's brought in and Conor Salmon, I suppose, getting the full game against Austria. Have you been convinced with Salmon? I know Trapp is kind of using him as a target man, but I never really thought that was Conor's style of football ever, really.
Yeah, and I'm not entirely sure that's completely what Trapp was doing with him. It's a little bit hard to figure out what he's doing with him because he seems to play behind long for chunks of the game. And I know Salmon a little bit from going back to his UCD days, and you know, and it's an interesting thing that I think, you know, that there's such goodwill behind the players who've come through the League of Ireland. Obviously, Wes Houlihan is the outstanding example of that. Where you know, but also Long and Doyle, you know, that amongst the supporters, there's a real feel for these guys, and yet there's no real popular support for Conor Salmon's place in the team. And I think that if you look at the way that the team is developing with the fullbacks, pushing on more and the team, you know, attempting to play a bit more football, I think the logical conclusion of that is that there'd be a more footballing, striking partnership. That might not be Houlihan. I mean, Trapp clearly has his kind of very firm view that would, you know, including Houlihan, represents a switch to a different formation, a 4-4-1-1 or a 4-5-1 that he doesn't really want to, more the latter, that he doesn't really want to do. But you know, certainly two guys who can play the ball on the ground, who can, you know, react with the overlapping fullbacks, who can, you know, play more football in the opposition half. And really, that was where we fell down against the Austrians, because in a lot of other ways, the way the team is developing is very positive.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I suppose to continue the development of the team, and it brings about a couple of friendly clashes, Emmett, and none more so than England at Wembley. The first time we've played them in a friendly since 1995. Of course, everybody remembers that ill-fated Lansdowne Road clash. But I suppose the main talking point regarding this game so far is the atmosphere. What kind of atmosphere is going to be generated in Wembley? Will there be a lot of Irish fans there? I know the FA have encouraged fans to stop singing their No Surrender at the end of their Rule Britannia chant, and it's going to be an interesting one, but I think a lot of people will be talking about the atmosphere.
Well, I mean, you'd imagine there'd be a very good atmosphere at it, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to kind of in any way play down the seriousness of what happened in Northern Ireland and in Britain and down south over the previous 25 years. But certainly, I mean, that was part of what contributed to the edge that there was in those sort of games. That's gone, but there should be, you know, a very, I hope, good rivalry there. I've been at a couple of games between Ireland and England. I was at, I think, the last one in Wembley. And there is just such a kind of, you know, there's still that sense. I think particularly amongst the Irish fans, it's a bigger game for us than it is for them. There will be a real sense of being up for it, I think. And really, it's been a problem for Ireland over the last few years. A few of the friendlies have been against kind of lesser teams. I mean, we see this now with Georgia coming in June. They're against teams that really the fans aren't all that pushed about. Obviously there's a kind of scrutiny of our own performance, and that from a manager's point of view, the games have value in terms of developing the team. But really for the supporters, they're not that meaningful. And I think that game's going to be very different. There's a big Irish community over there. They have really turned out for the games against the teams like Nigeria, the ones that have been played in Craven Cottage. But I really do think that this one will be very, very different.
Yeah, James, you're based over in London, I think it is, and certainly, as Emmett was saying, there is a huge community of Irish over there. I know the actual FA in England have been selling tickets to Irish fans over there. They've been selling the tickets on their website to the away fans, which is probably a first for them.
Yeah, I've not seen that before. And yeah, you can go on the FA website and buy tickets in the Irish end. So that, again, I hadn't seen it before. But there's a big interest in people I've talked to, and you look at the forums of people actually traveling over, I think it's a midweek game Wednesday night, but there does look like there's going to be a big Irish contingent at it. Having said that, when the game was first announced, I think England fans weren't exactly enthused by it. I know they're playing Scotland as well as part of the 150th anniversary FA. This is what this game is about. They travel to Rio actually a couple of days after this game to play Brazil. Obviously, that's a bit more glamorous than us coming to London. But if we'd been told about this game the day after we were beaten 6-1 by Germany, people would have said, let's not go, lads. Let's not embarrass ourselves. So maybe over the last two games, we can travel hoping to put on a bit of a performance, because fans will certainly demand that we don't shame ourselves playing England in Wembley.
Yeah, I think, Emmett, that's a fair point. A lot of Irish fans wouldn't like to get a stomping.
No, I agree completely with James there. I mean, it is a big thing. I mean, I was talking to some friends about doing something maybe to mark the anniversary of the England game at Euro 88. It'll be the 25th anniversary and a couple of weeks later. And one of the things that really we were kind of taking into consideration was this idea that what would you do if we took a bit of a hiding at Wembley, that it would put a real dampener on everything. I do think, like, I'm, you know, England for us in a friendly is as close as a friendly can come, I think, to a competitive game. There'd be a lot at stake in terms of pride. I think people will look at the team that goes through New York and play Spain and think, you know, if this team gets a hiding, then, you know, it's against a fantastic Spanish side. But nobody will make any allowances for the quality of the English team in any way at all. As far as we're concerned, we have to perform against them. And I think that'll be reflected in, you know, what we've always seen with the players in the past is that it means a lot to them, because they're playing in English clubs. They're playing, you know, in few enough cases at this stage, sadly enough, with actually members of the team, because they're just simply not at clubs of that caliber. But I don't doubt that it will mean an awful lot to them, and I think it should be a good game, a good occasion.
Emmett, if I could just ask you a question, do you think, like, traditionally that time of year, end of season friendlies, we would see a lot of squad people pulling out of the squad? But
yeah,
I think we've got four games in about 2 weeks, and one of those is a qualifier. So we've got kind of glamour fixture in Wembley, a glamour fixture against Spain, and then a World Cup qualifier. What way would you see it, or what would you anticipate?
I don't really know what's going to happen. It's an interesting thing, because obviously the last of those games is the New York game against Spain, and that's you know, in one way, notwithstanding the kind of traditional importance of England games to us, it's in a way the most prestigious of them because of the quality of the Spanish team and all that they've achieved over the last few years. But it is kind of interesting. Normally, you do see, there's been a lot of talk about the last US tour, the 2007 tour, and how many players were lost to that in the end. Only kind of half a dozen, maybe, of the squad were players who you would have expected to be in a full strength squad at that stage. So you could end up with a very weak squad. But my sense is that at the moment, Trapattoni is making enough changes to the squad that a lot of the players will want to be part of that. Now, I don't think, you know, I would put money, for instance, on the likes of Glenn Whelan not traveling, guys who are, you know, assured of their place in Trapattoni's plans, and, you know, at the end of a long, hard club season, and are probably kind of becoming a bit more prone to injury. But I'm hoping that the core of the younger group that Trapattoni's been sort of bringing into the squad over the last couple of years will be there. And if you have, you know, the likes of Coleman and James McCarthy, Mark Wilson, players like that, going to America, going to London, that would be a very worthwhile exercise. The hope is that their clubs simply don't exert an awful lot of pressure on them and on the FAI to let them take a holiday.
It'd be nice to see, the way we're talking about Coleman, Wilson, McLean, the way we played in the last couple of games, it'd be nice to see them have a go at Spain. Certainly we'd have to put in up a better display than we did in Poland. And I think Spain will be preparing for the Confederations Cup, so they're likely to have a fairly strong team. So it'd be nice if we could, you know, try to play a bit of football against them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I mean, in terms of what happens on these occasions, you know, you can't turn the clock back. You can't say what would have happened at the European Championships. But it would be, as you say, it would be a good thing if we go there with a strong squad, try and play the way that, you know, a lot of fans would like to see the team play, and the way, to be fair, that we've shown signs of beginning to play at times. So, you know, that would be a positive thing. It would be an interesting from Trapattoni's point of view, because when this is put to him constantly about, you know, a more fluent footballing style of play and what might have been achieved, he consistently asks the question, well, you know, would we have qualified for the European Championships? Would we have got to a playoff and pushed France so close? Those questions are unanswerable, but in a strange sort of way, I could see Trapattoni, if we do go there, try and play football and take another hiding from Spain, him going, well, look, I told you so.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It'll certainly be interesting to see. Emmett, before we go, I just want to bring a point to you. You mentioned about some of the friendlies we've played in the past. They haven't really been glamorous, and we have a couple of glamour ones now. But is it not fair to say, regarding the whole rankings and seedings, should we be paying a little bit of attention to that? Because it always seems to be when there's a draw for, say, qualifiers for the Euros or qualifiers for the World Cup, we always seem to be in that third seeded position, and then maybe for a while we could be sneak into the second seeded position of teams, but the majority of time it's always third. And a lot of that comes down to the type of friendlies that that you play. You know, if you win a match, you get a certain amount of points.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if I may be correct, like we were the top seeds. In fact, when we were drawn with Russia, the last campaign, but the time before that, when we ended up playing Russia, I think that was in 2002.
Yeah.
And we have moved up and down a bit, but my understanding of it is that the friendlies have really only started counting for the world rankings and for the draws in the last few years. I mean, before that, it used to be done on a kind of coefficient of competitive games over the previous couple of campaigns. So it's a fairly recent phenomenon that I think maybe the last 3 or 4 years that the friendlies have counted and contributed towards our ranking and not towards our ranking, they've always contributed towards our ranking, but towards the position in the draws. I think it's a mistake, or I think at least that they should be divided between friendlies that count and friendlies that don't count, because, you know, Trapattoni has kept an eye on it. Trapattoni consistently talks about where we're ranked. He consistently gets it wrong where we're ranked as well, and severely overestimates where we are these days. Brian Kerr, when he was the manager, also tended to play very strong teams in friendlies, and we had a phenomenal record in friendly games under Kerr, just not so hot in competitive games at times. But I do think that managers should be free to experiment more in friendlies, and certainly a quantity of them each year there should be a kind of waiver on them, so that you can bring young players in, you can try something different, because the freedom simply isn't there. Particularly, I don't know whether it's something that doesn't interest the English, because they don't do it very much, but certainly for other associations, it's very difficult to go to the English clubs and look for the release of players to play B internationals. The finances are also difficult for in terms of them for an association like the FAI at a time that it's in trouble. So there are a lot of reasons why those sort of things don't happen. And FIFA changed the rules on friendly internationals to cut down the number of substitutions, and I agree with that to a large extent, because games used to become slightly farcical, they would lose any sense of pattern whatsoever and become very poor spectacles. But I do think that in at least a number of two or three games a year, the players, managers not be only free but actually be encouraged to introduce new talent and give players a chance.
Yeah, we certainly will see a lot of new talent. Listen, Emmett, thanks a million for joining us on the programme this evening.
It's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Yes, indeed. Thanks there to Emmett Malone, football correspondent with the Irish Times. Now, James, just following on from what Emmett was saying, there's certainly a chance for new faces to come into the Irish squad. We've seen Pilkington has been injured the whole time. Every time we've called him up, it's always been the week before the international clashes where he pulls something bad in his knee and the poor fella is out for like a month or two. But there's a lot of chance for new players. As you said, if there is dropouts, there will be lads waiting in the wings to come in. Who would you like to see in the Irish squad coming in for these friendlies?
Well, even apart from the dropouts, Dave. It's 4 games in 2 weeks, so he's going to need a very big squad, and he's going to need a squad when they go to the US, because it's likely that we'll see players pull out then. In terms of players you'd like to see come in, I guess we've not seen Pilkington, so everybody wants to have a look at him. We could probably have a look at another couple of goalkeepers as well. Although Ford now, he did very well in the two qualifiers, but he's not got that much experience. So maybe this is a chance that we give Ford an extended run in the 4 games.
The likes of Bunn, though, when you mentioned goalies, we have Mark Bunn of Norwich and Rob Elliott of Newcastle. He's got a couple of games. And I've seen Alex McCarthy of Reading have a very good game this week.
Yeah, I wonder, would Trapattoni be tempted to call up a few of the younger guys from the Irish under-21s or even younger, you know, for the likes of the trip to the US? Now, given that we're playing Spain, and you'd like to see us put up a performance, there's no point in bringing guys in if we're tanked 4-5-0 by the Spanish. Again, it'd be interesting to see if we have a couple of declarations, given that we're playing England in Wembley and we've got this glamour toy. There's an argument again, will Wes Houlihan be given a run in the team in the qualifier or the friendly with Georgia? Will he get an opportunity against England, because he's far from an established member of the squad? People are talking about getting him in the starting 11, but actually getting him in the squad was a struggle in the first place.
Yeah, it really was. And what is there one fear, though, that the clubs could, as Emmett mentioned this as well, the clubs could turn around, and that it is including the likes of the younger lads like Mark Wilson, James McCarthy, Seamus Coleman. They're week in, week out Premier League players, and usually what happens with those players is the clubs do request that they have a leave of absence from friendly matches and tournaments like this, like tournaments going over to the USA and that.
Yeah, although, like, we've been talking about the England and the Spain game, but really the priority has to be the Faroes game, which is a World Cup qualifier. So if a club, you know, Trapattoni's well within his rights to request that he gets everybody for that game. And when he names his squad, it'll be with that game in mind. It'll just happen to also include the Spain game, the Georgia game, and possibly the England game first and the Spain game at the end. So he's entitled to name a huge squad at the start for all 4 games, but knowing that there's a World Cup qualifier in the middle of it. And we should stress, Dave, that we really need to post up a big score against the Faroes. We saw Austria beat them 6-0. Our goal difference is, you know, we're in a precarious position. We're joint second on points, but we're behind Sweden and Austria in terms of goal difference, and Sweden have a game in hand. So we can talk all we want about putting performance in against England and that, but really, the Faroes is the most important, not necessarily from a fan's point of view, but it should be from the squad point of view. So you ask about players again. Is Kendrick going to get a look in? He was called up at the same time as Salmon. There's a few guys you named there who, as we said, would actually have to declare. Surely we're going to have a look at Pilkington this time, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a quick one, James, before we wrap up the show. A couple of Irish players that could be on the move in the summer. Now, I know it's the usual story with Irish players. We see them listed in the papers of one club wants them, this club wants them, that club wants them, and no serious bids are ever put in. Of course, we've seen Chris McCann, he's wanted by a couple of clubs like Norwich, Swansea, I think West Brom, and one or two of the Championship clubs. Of course, he's been captain of Burnley for a lot of the season, and James McCarthy to United, perhaps that could be a too big of a step for him.
Yeah, but it's great to see his name being linked with it. We heard about, I think he was linked with him around January, but Ferguson had come out and said he wasn't going to sign anybody in that transfer window. It's nice to see an Irish player being linked with a club like that. We spoke about around January time that, the likes of Kevin Doyle would have loved a move in January, but he's just not performing enough to earn a transfer. And he's one, in the summer, you'd be worried about quite a few. We keep talking about the quality of player we have and the level they're operating at. Like, you go back to Ford, we've got a Championship level. Not to beat up on Ford, because a goalkeeper's a position where perhaps you can get away with it. But we've got Championship player, Championship level goalkeeper, lower Premier League level in the majority, championship level players, squad players, some in the MLS. Like, this is the level we're operating at. So any move for any player that either jumps up above that level or brings somebody else into the same bracket, if you like, can only be good for the pool of players we need.
Yeah, and if there was one player, one Irish player that you think would get their move in the summer, would it be someone like James McCarthy, particularly if Wigan failed to stay in the Premier League?
Yeah, like, just a kind of anecdotal thing, Dave. We're running a fantasy football team, and I know a fantasy football league, and I know a lot of people sometimes try to run a all Irish 11. Now, it's by no means a barometer, but like, Irish players are not picking up points in that and haven't, and will be bottom of that league, and there's a reason of it. So week in, week out, Irish players are not picking up points. We go back, we touted Shane Long was having a good season. He was having a good season up to about Christmas when he'd gotten goals against Chelsea and Man City, but and he's our main, he's one of the players everybody wants to see in the team, but they're not exactly firing them in. Like, John Walters has got a couple of goals, but they're not exactly 10, 15 goals a season men. Do you know what I'm trying
to
say?
Is that, yeah.
McCarthy would, you'd have to think, would attract some attention. We shouldn't discount Shay Given either. I was speaking to a couple of people, actually a couple of Arsenal fans who, you know, Arsenal fans are not enthused with the goalkeeper situation they have at the minute. And you've got somebody like Shay Given, who's proven, now he's on pushed on a few years, but he's proven Premier League, proven international. Would he get a move in the summer?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're kind of, if the likes of Stoke are going to get relegated, are the likes of Whelan, Walters, Wilson, are they going to get another transfer back up to a Premier League? And if they do, chances are there'll be a team again who's going to scrap for relegation next year. So,
and that's what the problem is, James, I think it's fair to say, because we have very few players playing at the top level. I mean, our Everton lads, Seamus Coleman, Darren Gibson, they're, you know, challenging for the Champions League, and unfortunately Gibson just simply won't play for Trapattoni at the moment. So we have Seamus Coleman playing probably at the highest level of all our players. I mean, that's, do Irish fans need to lower their expectations when it comes to the international side?
I know we often ask that, and Trapattoni would infuriate some people if he suggested that we should lower our expectations when he says our players don't play for Man United, they don't play for Chelsea, which is correct. But we actually don't need to hear that, Dave, because Irish teams have always, and it's a cliche, punched above our weight. So Irish fans have expectations. Irish fans expect to qualify for each tournament, and we should have those expectations, because it means we demand standards from our players and our manager. And so I don't think we should lower given, okay, we haven't got the players now, but it does come in cycles. Suddenly, from the team that was beaten against Germany, and the players that have come in, we've got Coleman has come in, McCarthy is there, Shane Long is a young guy, suddenly it's quite a young team we've got, and that can only mean, you'd have to say, good things for the future. We also spoke about teams or under-19s are doing quite well. So, you know, it is about bringing them in. Traditionally, Trapattoni wasn't prepared to give them a go in the team. Now he is. And the international, the Irish team is a shop window for players to move. So we spoke about Doyle not being in the team and not being in the Wolves team. Like, it'd be hard to anticipate him being sold anywhere in the summer, but you never know.
Yeah, absolutely. And we might have a couple of new strikers coming along the line. The likes of Paddy Madden, top scorer of League One at the moment. Surely he'll be playing at least in the Championship next season. And all the young Villa guns who won the under-19s Next Gen Series, I mean, that's impressive. The likes of Samir Carruthers, Graham Burke, Jack Grealish. I mean, it's good.
Yeah, I think there was five or six in the starting 11 of that team. And I think Grealish has been on the Villa senior bench once or twice this season. So we'd expect them maybe next year to be there or thereabouts on the first team. That can only be good because there's so many Irish people there. So there's definitely opportunity. I've no doubt we'll see one or two big moves. But McCarthy to Man United, I really don't know about that one, Dave. We'd have to wait and see. It would certainly be a brilliant move for him, a brilliant boost. it would also send a signal, you know, that you're in the you appear for the Irish team, that things can happen. And unfortunately, the biggest shop window for that is qualifying for tournaments, and in that respect, we just don't know. It's a mountain we have to climb. But given the improvements we saw against Sweden and Austria, that's what gives me some hope that perhaps we're not out of it yet.
Yeah, hopefully we're not out of it. And before we rock and roll, James, Sligo Rovers running away with the league. They really are unstoppable. People are calling them the Bayern Munich of the League of Ireland. Now, we were wondering last year, was this just a lucky year for Sligo? But certainly they've taken that experience and they seem to be an even better side this year.
Yeah, and what's fantastic is they're getting great crowds as well, Dave. So the showground is getting packed out week in, week out, which is what you want to see. But they've actually been building for a few years now. And we spoke before about how Sligo are kind of getting the plaudits for the style of football they play. So it's great to see. I know when Shamrock Rovers won it, they were the style they played in was kind of criticised. And it's nice to see that the Irish champions play a nice brand of football. But having said that, Rovers went and won 7-0 last night.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's good to see Sligo, and lots of people would say it's good to see a provincial team, if you like, up there, because I think what the league always needed was a spread of teams from around the country. So it's only good. You don't want to see a team run away with it, but it's also nice to know that traditionally, and Sligo had their troubles too in the last few years, that even a team that would win the League of Ireland wouldn't have a guarantee of holding on to their players. There's no such thing as a 2 or 3 year contract in the League of Ireland anymore, but it's nice to see a team that's builds it and builds the support and plays in the right way, wins it, and then is able to keep it together and keep the momentum going, because that's what everybody wants to see.
Yeah, onwards and upwards for Sligo. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on the Why Big Football Show. Our thanks to Emmett Malone, Irish football correspondent with the Irish Times, and of course Gavin Tehan, event manager for the Irish World Cup 2013. We'll do it all again very, very soon. Take care.